Hey guys, I'm just controlling who gets in and who doesn't get in. It'll be a second. Trying to control everything here. Chat. More. Okay, guys, sorry, we just had a couple of nasty people try to join, so we had to make sure they were out and that we're controlling the share. So it's like a smaller group, but it's the only group that wants to come and learn, not the Zoom bomb. Okay, so we're up to Maka number 8. And Maka number 8 is Arba. And what are the overlaps between Arba and between our experience in coronavirus? So Arba, of course, is a significant shift because the Parshio shift. Remember, Parshios Vayera has 7 makos. An easy mnemonic is Vav Aleph, the first 2 letters of Vayera, are the equivalent of 7. Bo, the next Parsha, has 3, Beis Aleph. So it's pretty easy to remember the 7-3 distribution. But presumably, the cornering off between Va'er and Bo means that there is a significant shift between Barad and Arbit, despite how dramatic Barad was. And we talked about, I recorded yesterday, no one came to the share, but I recorded yesterday the dramatic statements about Barad. There is a shift and there is a difference between everything that happens until now and Arbit. And that shift is noted not just by the change in Parsha, but by the introduction. Bayom Hashem El Moshe, Bo'al Paro, Leman Shisi Osa Sa'ila Bikubo, Uleman Tisaper Biazne Bincho Ven Bincha, Esa Sheri Salati Bimisraim, Bias Osa Sayashur Samti Bambi Datem Kin Yashem. And here, for the first time, the Jews are expected to tell a story. Uleman Tisaper Biazne Bincho Ven Bincha, Esa Sheri Salati Bimisraim. They're activated. In the past, they've been bystanders. We really haven't heard much about the Jews. We know that certain makos didn't affect them. Certain makos did affect them. But here the Jews are actually going to tell the story. I want them to watch. I want them to witness. 1 second, I have to ask my family something. 1 second, please. Can I just ask everyone to please stop screaming? It's coming across. Say thank you, just a yes. Okay, sorry about that. There's a little screaming going on in our house, a little quarantine fever. So it's hard to hear. A lot of good relationship building. Okay. So they're starting to teach their grandchildren. And of course, slaves don't really have grandchildren. So the fact that they're starting to imagine having grandchildren, presumes that they're starting to see themselves imaginatively as liberated. So there's a bit of a shift. They're now active, they're not passive. They're telling stories, they're thinking of themselves as having grandchildren. This is, of course, the lead up to Arba. This is not about Arba per se. I just wanted you to get a sense that Arba is a very dramatic shift. But what parts of Arba are notable and what parts of Arba correspond or correlate to the corona situation? So first and foremost, and it's hard not to notice this, the word arba sounds very, very similar to the word harbe. If you swap in the hey for the aleph, it's pretty clear that it's harbe. And of course, even if you ignore that first letter, the hey and the aleph, the word resh beis suggests volumes, sizes, masses, large numbers. And of course, arba represents masses and numbers that human beings can't deal with. We can deal with locusts, we can deal with insect infestation, but when they come, I didn't Google, but I imagine if you Google how many locusts are there in an average infestation, you're looking at billions, well, not millions, billions. Again, you can Google them. I don't know if we can even count them. How would you count them? You'd probably just go up in a helicopter and take a assessment of the size of a swarm and then try to figure out the density per area, and then you'd get to the more or less an estimate, but throwing out billions of locusts. So the locusts per se, it's not like the crocodiles at Sfardea or the death of Dever. You can deal with locusts, but you can't deal with billions of them. It's being overwhelmed by numbers, not necessarily by the plague itself, by harbe, just too many. And I think that that's very much a comment to what we're going through. We can deal with people that have the flu. We know the coronavirus. We've been able to dissect it and to dismantle it to its RNA and understand what makes it work. And if one person had corona, or the average amount of people that typically fall sick with the flu had corona, we'd be able to resolve the illness. The problem is the numbers mount so quickly, and they grow so exponentially, and they grow so rapidly, we just can't, like when people are flattening the curve, it's just about buying time, because we have to recalibrate. We allocate public health funds based on the assumption that X amount of people will get ill with the flu during the months of March in the Northern Hemisphere. And of course, we shade 10, 20% more. Now we're not dealing with X, we're dealing with X squared or X to the fourth. And those numbers are overwhelming us and our medical care professionals and our medical resources. It's really a very, very different plague and very different recognition of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. I spoke about this a little bit earlier in the year in this crisis. Typically, we say, Magadlu Masecha Hashem, that Hashem's actions and his world are so deep and so beyond that we can't understand them. But this is not a comment on COVID-19. We understand COVID-19. We're not saying Magadlu Masecha Hashem. It's more about Marabu Masecha Hashem, that this is just too much for us to handle. And we realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Chachma is not just in ideas that we can't crack, but in the synchronicity and the balance when the numbers just get out of control. So that's, I think, one of the coronavirus-related messages or issues pertaining to Arba. Another is actually also very interesting, and Shmuel, you'll get a kick out of this, is Arba happens seasonally in certain areas. The African subcontinent suffers. In fact, you guys just had Arba. You had locust infestation in parts of the continent. But what made this so miraculous and supernatural was that the Arba followed Barad. Namely, normally when our country is affected by Arba, when it's very hot and it's very dry and it's very arid, at that point, ecologically, locusts rise out of the ground and do their thing. Here, the Arba came in a very, very wet environment. Namely, it was very cold, it was very wet, there was a lot of ice, there was a lot of, it wasn't dry, there was a lot of smoke from the Barad. And that's what made it so interesting, is that from the Egyptian standpoint, it would have been one thing if in the dead of the summer, like let's put it more or less into our terms, if Pesach happened, let's say April that year, Yetzias Mitzrayim, Arba probably happened around February time. And Makas Becharos is April. A month earlier is Choshech, or an important time. February 15th, more or less, was an Arba occurred. And it was very wet in general because it was the winter. It was even more wet because they just had Barad. So it's a very wet, wintry environment. It's the last moment you'd expect Arba to break out or to erupt. And that's what made it so supernatural in the sign of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I'm thinking a lot about flus, and then flus are seasonal, and flus happen in the winter. But evidently, this is a flu, we'll still see, because a lot of people in the Northern Hemisphere looking to people in the southern hemisphere and saying, well, it's their summer, and how does the hot weather affect this virus? Because flus are typically localized to winter weather. And again, part of the issue was the real eruption now is March and April. It's really not summer or winter for either hemisphere. But as the northern hemisphere is surging into its summer, southern hemisphere is surging into its winter, a lot of thought around about whether this is really something that's going to defy season, and it's something that's very, very different than anything we've experienced until then, and represents the Kaddish Baruch Hu's signature in ways that Hashem always is involved. But sometimes we just take it for granted, part of the cycle. Then when you have a flu eruption that happens in the spring and summer rather than in the dead of the winter, if this had happened, let's say, in December, maybe more of a feel of people coughing and pneumonia and cold and people can't recover. And now that it's happening in the spring, it's pretty clear that it's something a little bit different. So that's something else I think rings some bells. A third issue is the impact, the drama that locusts have on the landscape or on the area. And when you look at an aerial view after a locust infestation, it's literally shaving off the entire greenery. You've got nothing left. It's not just breaking some trees or eating some fruit and crops. And I mentioned this earlier in one of my shiurim, that this was a reversal of Mysebraceous, and some of the Makos were meant to reverse Mysebraceous. This was a reversal of Tatsheha Aretz Desha. One of the pivotal points in Mysebraceous is when the entire earth became covered with green. So we don't live on Mars, we live on Earth. And Earth is green, and Earth is verdant, and photosynthesis and energy, really. The greenery of the earth is the source of life, of oxygen and energy. And now HaKadosh Baruch had removed the blanket carpet that he placed, and he's just seeing a completely, completely different world. And someone else is trying to reconnect, so someone else is trying to crash. I'm going to ask him to leave. Okay, so he's going to leave our meeting. We just have our small little meeting. That was cute. He tried to call himself Reconnecting. That was his nickname, Reconnecting. So he's doing tshuva. But in any respect, and I think that we're starting to see, you look at all these pictures of very famous areas that have no people there, and stock markets and stadiums and public areas that normally are teeming with people, and you're seeing how quick and how dramatic and everything we take for granted, literally, not just our health, which is the basis, but just the not just the stock markets and the finance, which go up and down and oscillate, but you know, you'd imagine you land in Rome at any point in the year, the streets would be hustling and bustling. And Champs de Elysees, hustling and bustling. Statue of Liberty, Big Ben. You'd imagine these places have thousands and thousands of people, and now these are ghost towns. I mean, my daughter visited me today, obviously at a distance. She's married, so she's not part of our family, so she stood outside and we waved at each other. But she said she lives in Yerushalayim. A couple of days ago, she went to the Kotel, and there was no one at the Kotel, literally not a single soul at the Kotel. So it has that sense of upending the world entirely, and just not just the functioning of the world, but just the visuals of the world that, you know, we're used to living, seeing trees, seeing birds, seeing. Imagine if you walked outside tomorrow and all the trees, grass, flowers, shrubbery were all gone, and you just lived in a blank world. It'd be very jarring, because it's very basic to what you expect the world around you to be. I think some of that is jarring. So I think part of Arba is the numbers, Harbe. Part of Arba is the ability for the Arba to jump across seasons after Barad, and part of it is the tsunami-like effect. We see a tsunami just wipes away and erases our reality. Two more subtle points. I introduced the Makkah before that Hashem told Moshe that the Jews should tell their grandchildren, Eis Asher Hisalalti B'Mitzrayim, an important word, Hisalalti B'Mitzrayim. Now the word Hisalalti literally means manipulate, exploit, brainwash, play with, toy with. And there's a lot of toying, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu toys with Paro's emotions and toys with Paro's free will. So that's certainly a comment in general. Why it's inserted here, and before Arba, it's a question. But the word Hisalalti B'Mitzrayim is a gloss describing the entire process. But there has to be some relevance for Arba. So I think what happens is, and some comment on this, that Barad was very, very frightening. As I mentioned last night, you can listen to it in Hawaii, it's very frightening. Very fearful, a lot of death, a lot of loud sounds, a lot of thunder, a lot of fire. It was just really, you thought you were going to die. And most didn't. And you took okay, we're finished. then all of a sudden you get whacked with Arba, you get pummeled with Arba. And there's a certain almost psychological toying that you think you're out of the woods, you think you're out of the trouble zone, and then all of a sudden you realize you're not. And I think there's a lot of that happening with countries that have recovered from the epidemic, and then there's a second outbreak. Or I think in the beginning we thought this was localized to China or the Far East, and you just can limit people from the Far East. Well, I think that when you're afraid of something and it costs you and it invades you, you're able to at least prepare for it. But when you think you're safe and you think you've managed something, you think you've escaped something, not just you've made a mistake, you think you're safe going forward, but you think you've already navigated a situation, and then you're hit with a second. So the combination of Barad and Arba, which is very devastating, particularly after Barad. Finally, and this of course is interesting, is when the Arba descend on Egypt, Hashem warns them, Ki im ra'inata l'shalech es ami, inani mevi machar Arba b'gvulecha. I will send locusts across your borders. The two makos that really cover the entire boundary of Egypt were Tzfardea and Arba, of course, are very similar, and Chazal cross-linked between the two. And their comment roughly is that the Tzfardea and Arba cover the entire borders of Egypt, but literally up until the boundary. Remember, their boundaries didn't have barbed wire fences, their boundaries didn't have, the boundaries were just lines in the sand. And yet the Arba and the Tzfardea cover the entire Gvul, and no more and no less. Now, of course, this showed the supernatural nature. Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't have any beef at that moment, didn't want to punish or otherwise correct other countries. But it also had a way, Chazal say, of highlighting what belonged to Egypt, what didn't belong to Egypt. And there were no more border wars, because Egypt couldn't say, oh, we deserve 100 more kilometers, because it's pretty clear the Arba or the Tzfardea had reached certain limits and hadn't wandered beyond, hadn't veered beyond. So it's very clear what the borders were. Now, why is this important? Well, it's important politically, because presumably the Egyptians didn't just torture and persecute their local slaves. But if you're persecuting and torturing an aggressive culture, you have to be militant, you have to be imperialistic, you have to want to conquer a land from your neighbors. And the Egyptians of those periods were very militant and bellicose, and a lot of wars, and wars are typically fought about boundaries and land. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving a certain lesson to say, this is where you're meant to live. And stop trying to increase your boundaries. And you're now going to have a very clear sense of what's yours, what's not, and all your wars are for naught, because it's very clear that you don't deserve any other land, because your land wasn't afflicted, or that land wasn't afflicted. You know, obviously, we're doing a lot of thinking about borders, and especially in the light of the last 60, 70 years. Obviously, you're younger, so you don't really see the overall surge, but there's been a globalization and countries without borders, and certainly the EU is probably the single most institutionalized expression of trying to figure out a world without borders. And then part of human struggle is to try to find larger organizations that can pool together resources. And globalization helps out. The internet is the jet fuel on growth that allows shared resources, shared finances, shared language, shared information. Then it takes away community, because communities are built by what unites us religiously, ethnically, racially, family-wise. And that's really the struggle for humanity. When you think of the United States right now, United States, part of why they're suffering, not the only reason, and part of their suffering coronavirus is because the states themselves are competing with one another for resources, because there isn't a federalization. But the United States is basically an experiment in trying to pull off both, trying to create centralized government, but also state rights. That's how it was formed. And right now, that balance isn't suited for this crisis. This crisis needs more centralized treatment and more centralized guidance and rules and guidelines. So a lot of thought about borders and boundaries and discriminating boundaries. Those are four of the five aspects of Arba to think about. The numbers, the jumping seasons, the tsunami-like change in the landscape, the panic after we thought we had, or they thought they had survived, and then, of course, the determining of boundaries. Okay, Mirtz Hashem, we'll see you tomorrow. Maybe we'll see some other friends tomorrow night at 10:30. Laila Tov, Shmuel, and Laila Tov.
Laila Tov.
Good night.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks a lot.